My name is Jonette Gay, and I'm the pastor of Otterbein United Methodist Church. I have with me today our media specialist.
Hi, Jason Burgess.
And we want to talk and we want to listen. Our faith is seen and understood in many topics. We're glad you've tuned in today to Hey Hey, anybody listening?
Chris.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Is this where I tell you about who I am?
Yeah. I think everybody would like to hear a little bit about.
My name is Chris Eden. I am an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church. I'm on a voluntary leave. We moved our family to Lancaster City almost 2 years ago. So I am available, and Pastor Jonette needed some help, so here I am.
Oh, well, it's good to have you here. It's good to have you here in Lancaster. I know I enjoy the city, so...
I do, too. We're right down by that restaurant, Luca.
Oh, well, that's a good place to be.
It's not bad. We're a couple of houses down from there, and we don't get to go in, but it's mm-hmm. nice. It's
yeah,
nice.
I hear it's pretty busy over
it
there.
It is very busy. You do not get reservations there easily.
You said you moved here to Lancaster. Were you pastoring somewhere before?
Yeah, I came to Pennsylvania in 2008. I grew up in Wichita, Kansas.
All right.
We moved the family here for seminary in 2008, up at Lancaster Theological Seminary. Moved into a row home for seminary families. There used to be a row of them on Pine Street. There mm-hmm. were five or seven of them. And so seminary families, folks with kids, would be offered those homes. And so we moved in there 2008 and enjoyed living in the area, studied, my heart out, and graduated in 3 years. And then the bishop assigned me to Beams United Methodist in Willow Street.
All right.
I served there for 7 years, and then they sent me to Memorial Church in Quarryville, served there for 5 years, and then I put in for a voluntary leave of absence so I could move the family to Lancaster. And I guess I should say, prior to all of that, I was an intern at Covenant United Methodist in their their children's program and their young adult program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm assuming that you came to know Jonette somewhere in that, or how did you come to know Audubon?
I don't remember when I met Jonette for the first time. It might have been when she reached out asking for some help for her sabbatical. I think mm-hmm. that might have been the first time I talked to her.
Oh, well, nice.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoy the congregation here.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. And to give her a break, I love it. That's what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Pastors need a break too.
They do.
And I feel bad. I sent her a text message while she was away, and I was like, "Oh no!"
I'm sure she thought nothing of it.
Nope. Yeah,
yeah.
I hope she did.
Yeah.
Is there something you'd like to tell us about? Maybe that might reinforce your sermon coming up this week.
I decided the of Jesus's ministry. Mm-hmm. This is the first major teaching that we have coming from the mountain. He begins the Sermon on the Mount with the Beatitudes. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to focus on that for 2 Sundays. I know that it won't be back to back, but.
So maybe somebody's not familiar with the term Beatitudes?
Yeah. Beatitudes. The Beatitudes are from Matthew 5. They are the opening verses of Matthew 5, where Jesus pulls up the side of a mountain and he sits them down, and then he proceeds to teach. They're found in Matthew, and I think they're also found in Luke, but in a different form. Mm-hmm. I think it's called the Sermon on the Plain there, and I think they appear there. But in Matthew's gospel, it's the most commonly known version. Blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, blessed are the peacemakers. He goes through a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. And
this is sort of him setting up the disciples to an understanding of what his ministry is there.
That's a good way to say it, because he is starting at the beginning with, this is what the kingdom of God looks like. The blessed are these people.
Mm-hmm.
which is very different from what blessed looks like in real life.
Sure.
In our everyday life, when we say, oh, I was blessed too, often it's, I was blessed to see my kids for Christmas, or I was blessed with this new job, or I was blessed with this or that. And those are not the kinds of blessings that he's talking about. Mm-hmm. Or blessed with riches, blessed with a new position of authority in community. Like, those are the kinds of things we think of as blessings.
Sure.
And he doesn't even name the birth of children. You know, we think of this child as a blessing. As birth of, he doesn't name that. That's not, the kingdom of heaven is something different.
Sure. I'm sure that means a lot to people at that time. People were making money, and the Romans were leading things and
extracting money,
blessing people, if you will, with the positions of power, or
yep.
just positions at all. There were it's odd how politics and everything are always sort of still the same,
and it never stops. It never stops.
Yeah.
Power works the same in every century, and people work, I think, the same in every century. We fool ourselves if we think otherwise. Mm-hmm. We are capable of the same evils and the same goodness as our forebears from centuries ago, and the systems are capable of the same.
It's funny. I started watching Ken Burns' film, the Roosevelts, and at the same time that I was starting to watch it, Jonette was recording her fireside chat. I don't know if you.
No, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Our previous episode was. So I thought that was really very interesting, but it's a long series. I'm like, oh, this is also very similar to what is going on now, but it was something sort of different about it, where I don't know, we have a party who's wants to have some more sort of authoritarian power. Here Roosevelt was kind of that same thing, but all of his goals were very centered on people's needs. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Roosevelt's an interesting cat, because he, in his own way, was divisive and flawed. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, flawed in many ways. Mm-hmm. But he was at the center of a movement, a change in politics that we've been dealing with ever since.
Yeah.
And his presence is still here.
Yeah, I feel like I really gained an understanding of how the political system changed from post-Civil War to now with watching this.
I remember growing up in Kansas, I think we were studying Roosevelt. It must have been middle school. Maybe it was high school, but I think it was middle school. And I was just enraptured by the changes that were happening, that he was bringing about, or at least that the people that were in power around him were bringing about. And I was talking to my grandmother some evening about how great he was. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, he's a charlatan. He's a con man. I mean, she just berated everything that he did. And I think that's when I first learned the complexity of politics and mm-hmm. perception of politicians. It was interesting to be kind of slapped with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I was so optimistic and so excited about him. And she just was not. Well, I was thinking now, this scene from a show, I think it's called The Good Omen. Terry Pratchett, I think, wrote it. There's an angel, there's a demon, and they have a friendship that has kind of happened over the millennia before Christ's birth, even. And there's this scene in the very first episode where you see Jesus talking on a raised hill, mm-hmm. and there's all these people that are listening, but the angel and the demon can't hear him. They're kind of back in the crowd a bit. And I think one of them says, well, why are people so upset? And the angel said, well, he said that we should love one another. And the demon said, oh yeah, that'll get it. You know, mm-hmm. it's all perception.
I don't know. How's any of that related to, I guess, to the Beatitudes? Okay. Anything you got? Well, something?
So try this. Try this. Yeah. Imagine you are not necessarily friendly to his message. Mm-hmm. You haven't heard it before. Some friend of yours brought you there. You're not quite sure. As these things happen, you know, someone says, oh, this so-and-so is coming to speak, you gotta come. And you're like, mm-hmm. all right, I'll go. And you encounter first a person that you can barely hear, but second, everyone around him is listening intently. Mm-hmm. I wonder if part of that is just seeing everyone around him getting a message that is different, and it causes you to experience it differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the things he's saying are blessed. Blessed are the mourning. Mourning people are not blessed. Mm-hmm. I mean, mourning people are hurting, and mm-hmm. they don't know when it's going to end. And the kind of mourning that he's talking about could be the mourning of death, or it could be the mourning of not having connection with God. It could be a mourning of having lost your kingdom to various empires that have taken over. It could be various kinds of mourning.
Mm-hmm.
But to hear the words, the mourning are blessed, what does it take for you to move from cynicism to, yeah, I think that's right? That little piece of the soul or the mind really intrigues me. What is it that changes a person?
Yeah, it's unpredictable.
And, it is. Yeah. I think that's one maybe connection with modern day. And it would mm-hmm. be no different than any day before ours. But modern day, there is a sense that information is available from all angles, all worldviews. So what makes yours unique?
Mm-hmm.
And we as Christians have this person in Christ that we say is the center of our worldview, that his worldview is the one that we want to make ours. That's the kingdom of heaven. Is we want that worldview, that kingdom, to come. And I think one of the difficulties that we have as Christians is relating that to all of the messages that are coming around us and mm-hmm. the people that are saying those messages. You know, what does it take to shift perspective in someone that hears what he's saying, and either it bounces off, like, you know, the old movie Ricochet, you know, bounces off, or it finds root somehow. I think that is one of the unique problems that Christianity has to deal with, is how do we connect that?
It's a unique problem for everyone, I think, in our mm-hmm. current day too. Something about the Roosevelts, when I was watching it, was with the fireside chat, was here all of a sudden everyone is hearing this one story all at the same time, and when you walk out after listening to that story and talk to your neighbor, you're instantly in a conversation about what you just heard, and that conversation is shared. I don't know, that sort of intimacy, that first time that people are getting that kind of intimate relationship with their radio, for instance, where before, I know in the show they were saying, you know, politicians always were speaking at a mic in a huge crowd. Now all of a sudden people were able to listen in the comfort of their home and be vulnerable, you know. I guess it's the vulnerability that sort of precedes that ability to connect with something that you weren't, I don't know, to like hear this, to be one of those people listening all of a sudden in the crowd, rather than being you know, suspicious of whatever it is that's in front of you.
To be able to hear the speaker as being fellow, as being human, you know, someone you can connect with, which that gets into Christology and a Trinitarian understanding of Jesus, and there's all kinds of theological roads you can go with that, but that humanness of Christ would be necessary for connection.
It's interesting. I'm going to be talking to Greg after this. Greg, who will be preaching this Sunday.
Oh, yeah, he's filling
in the other times. And he did last week's sermon, and he mentioned that he was saying to everybody, you are the son of God. Mm-hmm. We're all children of God. And I often think, when you're telling the story about Jesus, people don't consider the humanness of this person's interaction in the world, and always isolate him as if he's the son of God and there's no other there's no other children, and there's something just miraculously more inherently better about him no matter what. But he is a human in this time when he's preaching, and of course he has some kind of human flaws. There, You can't
be human. Be careful there. You can't say flaws. Well, not about Jesus.
I just mean, like, you can't be human and not get sweat on your brow.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you can't be human and not have a stomach ache, you know?
Yeah.
That's going to cause some inconsistency with whatever it is that's coming through your body,
yeah.
you know, to express yeah. yourself. So,
yeah, you can't be human without having questions,
yeah.
genuinely being curious about what's going on around mm-hmm. you. And thankfully, in Jesus's case, we have a bunch of questions that mm-hmm. he asked. But yeah, without that, I don't know how anyone connects to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they're connecting to is not him.
Mm-hmm.
Without his humanity, then what they're left connecting to is some spiritualized version of him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's dangerous.
Or an sort of idealized version and trying to place it into their human self.
Their own spiritualization.
Yeah.
Their own idealized version. Yeah.
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 I've talked to viewers before about how I was in or suffered a drug addiction. And
yeah.
In the midst of that, I had this sort of spiritual understanding that there was sort of two of me. One is the body that is physically alive and here, and I understood it because that physicality needed the drugs, you know. What it wasn't mentally, no matter what I thought about it, I didn't have any control over it. And it made me to start realizing, all right, there's a spiritual me that wants and there's a physical me that wants, and it's I have to identify the two in order to know, I need to use the bathroom. That's why I'm having a little trouble here.
That's
why
I'm feeling this way.
Yeah. Or I'm dehydrated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people don't make that distinction between what is a spiritual self, if you will, a metaphysical self that is connected to God, and the body is not, it's temporary. It doesn't really have any value in that necessarily. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Well, you use the term distinction, I think is good.
Mm-hmm.
They are distinct, but not separate.
Mm-hmm.
They are intertwined, but not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think we're finding even more in scientific learning how intertwined like our brain is to our stomach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the what's going on down here, gut flora or whatever, has a real close connection to how we're feeling in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
and vice versa, you know. So to see that being distinct, I think, is good. Not separate, but distinct. To be able to look at yourself, you know, this is something my body is dealing with or calling. This is an urge that I'm feeling. That in itself is your mind trying to distinguish, you know, between things.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that they're intimately connected in ways, you know, you'll never figure out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I would call it the mind when you're, because it's the body. The brain is the body.
Is the body, right. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking more of a spiritual sense where God is existing in all matter, if you will, and is present in all things. He doesn't need a body or this physical form in order to have some part of the existence, I guess, or the universe.
That's an interesting. Okay, so I if I go back to seminary, that sounds like the term panentheism, I think, which would not be pantheism, which is God is in this desk here I just kicked.
Mm-hmm.
God is in this lamp. God is, you know, that would be, as I understand it, pantheism. But panentheism being God's active participation in all of creation right now, not as a separate, complete, faraway, distant thing, but one who is intricately connected with every beating heart, blowing wind, and whatever.
Molecular particle, if you
right,
will.
Right, is not the same as,
yeah.
but is somehow participating in. I want to say it was Lee Barrett, who's a theology professor in seminary, still is a theology professor there. I think he tried to summarize that thought with the idea of music, that God is playing creation into creation actively. And so when God stops playing the music stops, creation stops. but it's not the same as God is all of creation. That's what I was hearing, what you were saying. Sure. That idea of God's participation and presence within all of creation, intertwined and yet not the same.
Hmm. Well, in that understanding, I like to think that Jesus is the most perfect intertwinement with humanity. And that's how he becomes this this understanding of God for humanity.
It's a beautiful way to think of incarnation. It's a really interesting way to think of incarnation. Well, we're still in Christmas, so it's a good time. Aren't we still in Christmas?
I don't know. Isn't it till
I don't know if we're still in Christmas season.
It's in the teens, right? Or no, today's the 9th.
Today's the 9th. Is it the 15th?
Yeah, I feel like it's 15th or 13th.
Well, I'm claiming it. We're still talking about incarnation.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, I think we had a lot. That was a pretty deep conversation. Is there anything else you'd like our new viewers to know about you?
No, not particularly. We'll meet soon. I think we've met before. I've been out to Otterbein. I've worshipped with these nice folks a couple times and participated in one of their Sunday studies with Greg Carey.
Yeah.
And, so I've gotten to meet some of them. I've met some of their leadership. So I'll look forward to meeting them soon.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, thanks for sitting down for this little chat with me.
Thanks for having me.
Glad you were with us today, and I hope you'll tune in again as we listen to one another.